And so, please press the pound sign now. Then press star 1 again to ensure your question is registered. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Gray, you may begin your conference.
Reporters on the phone. If you do identify yourself, that's going to reduce the chance of your remarks being attributed to one of the other members of the panelists, which we certainly would not want. So, Denise, it's all yours.
Thank you very much, Tom. Very much appreciate it. And good morning, and welcome to the opening day of Wind Power 2009. We're just coming from a very full morning of events. Leaders from the Obama administration and the governors of five Midwestern states joined wind energy leaders to talk about the tremendous growth that this industry is bringing to the country. Those of you who have visited Wind Power 2009 Exhibition Hall can see the truth about this industry firsthand. More than 1,000 companies are here networking and demonstrating products and services related to wind industry. Let me tell you, we have 47 countries that are here as well, so it's pretty exciting. These companies, though, know something that many Americans are beginning to understand. Wind energy is a source for economic prosperity and new jobs. Just the presence here of these governors and of Chairman Wellinghoff demonstrate that. These governors, who are all members of the Governor's Wind Coalition, agree and have spoken about the jobs and investments that this industry has brought to the economies of their home states. These leaders agree that the economic benefits of wind can boost the national economy when Congress approves a national renewable electricity standard. The long-term predictability, the commitment that an RES will enable the industry to attract investment capital and achieve manufacturing jobs, economies of scale that will spur economic development and lower consumer prices and strengthen U.S. energy security, and most important of all, help our environment. A new poll we are releasing today shows that 75% of Americans support a national renewable electricity standard that would get our country to generate 25% of its electricity from renewable energy by the year 2025. And what is remarkable is that this support is both deep and bipartisan. 86% of Democrats favor the RES proposal, as do 71% of independents and 62% of Republicans. And in fact, I know the Republicans are having town hall meetings around the country. I think this is really an important thing for them to be looking at in terms of their support, because we really haven't had that kind of support yet come out in Congress. So hopefully the town hall meetings and these governors will really help that move forward. The American people support an RES, though, because it will create jobs and reduce carbon emissions. Our job now is to make sure the members of Congress follow their constituents. I'm honored to introduce the four governors who participated in our roundtable this morning: Governor Chet Colver of Iowa, who chaired the panel, and Governors Jim Doyle of Wisconsin, Jennifer Granholm of Michigan, and Ted Strickland of Ohio. I'm also honored to introduce John Wellinghoff, the chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Chairman Wellinghoff is the most important position in the country to address the wind industry's most significant long-term barrier of transmission. I'll ask each of you to summarize in just a few sentences the main points of their remarks in the plenary for the benefit of reporters who are on the phones. We'll be then happy to take your questions.
Well, thank you, Denise, and thank you all for being here. We are very excited, obviously, about the unlimited opportunities that renewable energy and wind energy in particular offer this country and our respective states. The number one opportunity is to create really good paying jobs in states like Iowa and Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan at a time when we desperately need to create jobs. All of us are very concerned about the economic downturn, and we believe as governors it's our responsibility to create jobs and help provide opportunities for our constituents, and arguably the best industry to do that is in wind energy in particular. In Iowa, we have 9 manufacturers that have decided to set up operations in our state. We've created 2,300 green-collar jobs in places like Keokuk, Iowa, that at one point had the highest unemployment for a medium-sized city. Young people are excited about this new renewable energy opportunity. We have students graduating from our community colleges with a two-year degree making $50,000, $60,000 a year and deciding where in the world they literally want to go work. They have that many opportunities. They certainly have the opportunity to stay home in Iowa, too, if they choose to work at one of these nine manufacturing facilities. The second point I want to make is the importance of coordinating our message with the Obama administration, with FERC, with Congress. We have great opportunities, but we need a coordinated game plan to really tap this country's potential. It starts with the grid. We need to build out the grid. We need a smart grid. We need to improve the grid if we really want to transmit the power and maximize the potential in our respective states. And so that's why AWEA is so important. They can lead that dialogue. They can lead the discussion. They can bring all of the partners together, including the utilities and the municipal utility and the rural electric cooperatives and the manufacturers. So I'm excited that this administration, led obviously by President Obama's vision to tap this country's enormous opportunity and potential in renewable energy, with a coordinated approach and a very aggressive game plan, including encouraging Congress to pass the RES, we will create millions of green-collar jobs, stimulate our economy, and secure our energy future.
Well, thank
Governor
you very
Doyle.
Much.
Thank you.
This is Governor Jim Doyle of Wisconsin. I think my comments actually were better stated after the event. As I walked off the stage, several people came up to me, one of whom is opening a manufacturing plant in a middle-sized Wisconsin community, Wisconsin Rapids, a long-time paper-making community that has in recent years gone through some very, very difficult times. And they will be opening a plant, initially hiring 400 people, hope to be going to 1,000 people that will be building blades. This really is what we were all talking about, and we hope it's repeated hundreds and hundreds of times over, where you take a community like Wisconsin Rapids that has a long, great tradition in manufacturing, has very hardworking, highly skilled people, has a good educational system, including a good technical college system, and the company, they told me, have worked out the training program with the local technical colleges on exactly what they need to get the people trained and ready to go. That's what this conference has been all about, why we really appreciate the work of Wind Power. We have in Wisconsin over 200 companies that are suppliers in the wind energy business. We have an enormous opportunities right now. The Midwest, I believe, can be much of the answer to America's energy problems. We have great people, hardworking people, great manufacturing systems, great infrastructure, and there is a great deal we can do. So the story I just told you about Wisconsin Rapids is one that, again, I hope is repeated many times. It cannot be done repeated many times over, however, if there is not a good, strong national policy. One of the reasons wind has taken off in Wisconsin is we do have a good renewable portfolio standard, and our utilities now are desperately around trying to buy wind power because they have to. And we are extending that standard to 25% by 2025. Not only for electricity generation, but also for motor vehicle fuel from renewables. So we do need good, strong, wise public policy at the national and state level. And against that backdrop of that policy companies like the one Energy Composites in Wisconsin Rapids are going to be able to find really good business opportunities, and we look forward to working with them as they grow and expand in our state and the other states across the Midwest.
Thank you, Governor Doyle. Governor Granholm from Michigan. Thank you.
Very briefly, one, Michigan is a poster child of a state that's lost manufacturing jobs due to the global shift in manufacturing, but also the challenges with our automotive sector. So we want to replace manufacturing jobs with manufacturing jobs in wind, in solar, and other renewable and alternative energy solutions. We want to be a state that helps to lead with my partners up here, the country, but particularly the industrial Midwest, to go from the Rust Belt to the Green Belt. We know we've got, in Michigan, 700 suppliers to the automotive industry that could easily be doing wind component manufacturing. We've got phenomenal universities. We've got research and development companies all right now working on the next drivetrain for the car that could be working on the drivetrain for wind turbines. We have got companies that are focused on lightweight materials and composites and carbon fiber for the automobile that could be doing the same thing for wind turbine manufacturing. We have an infrastructure for transporting wind turbines, for linking both components, component manufacturers to the OEM. So bottom line for us is about jobs, and I continue to tell Michigan citizens that whenever you hear the words climate change or global warming, think jobs. Michigan. That's why we're here. We want to recruit jobs. We want to let people know we've got incentives, we've got capital, we've got the will, we've got the policy. With the federal legislation and the partnership with OWEA, we are going to create jobs. We are going to transform Michigan. We're going to lead. And I thank OWEA for the invitation to be here today.
Thank you so much. Governor Strickland from Ohio.
Ted Strickland from Ohio. And I am sitting here listening to my colleagues thinking of what I heard then-President Jimmy Carter say in the mid-70s. He said addressing the energy needs of this country was the moral equivalent of war. And we didn't take heed, as we should have. Where would we be today if we had invested in renewable sources some 20 or 30 years ago? But the zeitgeist is such today, the spirit of this time is such that we are on the verge, I believe, of a major breakthrough in the way we power our country and our states are powered. Renewable energy means jobs. And for those who have the misconception that renewable sources for meeting our energy needs are somehow a fringe movement, they are so hugely mistaken. This is the movement of our time. If we make the right decisions now, 5, 10, 15 years from now, we can look back and say we did it when it was important that we do it. And so a federal standard that will not preempt state standards that are stronger, I might add, because we're proud of Ohio's standard and we don't want it to be weakened. But we do believe there needs to be a federal renewable standard, and that we need to get serious about doing what we must. It's a national security issue. It's an economic issue. And it's a jobs issue. And Ohio is concerned about all three of those things. And so if there are those here in this audience or at this conference who want a place to invest, Ohio has an open door, and we will work with you to make your investment a profitable one.
They've all been competing on who has the best best place to invest during the conference. next, Chairman John Wellinghoff of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Thank you, Chairman Wellinghoff.
John Wellinghoff from FERC. Thank you, Denise, and I want to thank OWEA for having me here today. I have a little bit different perspective. I do believe, however, that a national renewable energy standard is a necessary and desirable step, but it is only a first step. But for me at FERC, it's a step that I see not only for jobs that we've heard from our four governors, but also for stabilizing costs for consumers. It's a diversification of our energy mix. We need to diversify the energy mix. We need to move off of volatile fossil fuels. We need to also electrify our transportation system in this country. And the way we're going to do that is to move in massive amounts of renewable energy, again, to take us off foreign oil and that dependency and that security issue. So it's about costs for consumers, and people have to understand this. It really is about costs for consumers. It's about making electric markets diversified markets that have supply options that are multiple in those markets to allow consumers choices. So for me, that is the directive, direction and focus that I've started at FERC with respect to integrating renewables into the grid. But as I said, the RES is only the first step. There are two other steps that are absolutely necessary as well. The second is transmission. We simply cannot believe that we can incrementally continue to develop these renewables without building up our entire grid into a strong grid system, because it was not designed to do what we're trying to do. We can do it, however. It's not that we can't do it, but we must start doing it now. That's step one. Step two, actually. Step three is we need to also integrate in the demand side. Energy efficiency, demand response, distributed generation, combined heat and power, those things all are complementary to what we're doing here with more central renewable wind, solar, other renewable resources, because those resources on the demand side, in essence, controlling consumers' loads in ways that consumers can benefit and participate in the grid, will help us integrate even more renewables into the overall system. So that has to be done as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now we'll be happy to take your questions. Yes, ma'am.
Thanks. Nicole Weinhold, New Energy Magazine, Germany. I've got a question regarding the transmission highway at Mr. Wellinghoff. Don't you think that there is a connection needed to Texas, a stronger connection needed?
John Wellinghoff from FERC. We have three grid systems in this country. We have an eastern interconnect that goes from the eastern side of the Rockies on to the Atlantic. We have a western interconnect that goes from the Rockies to the Pacific, and then there's Texas. Texas is a weakly interconnected system, and it has been such because if they became strongly interconnected under the current Federal Power Act, they would come under FERC's jurisdiction. They want to remain separate both from a interconnection electrical standpoint, and politically they also want to be separate. So I'm not going to wage into that question, although I would say it is interesting because we're finding entities in the Midwest that are increasing the amount of wind in their footprint, and they're finding by doing that they're putting themselves in a position that they could become more stable if that footprint could be increased. So if Texas could be more strongly interconnected into the Midwest, for example, they could integrate even more wind into their system. So it would be a benefit to them from that standpoint, and it's something they ought to consider. Maybe we can still give them an exemption from FERC.
Lynn Harrison, right here in the front row.
Lynn Harrison, I'm the editor of a magazine called Wind Power Monthly. I've got two questions very quickly. John, I have a question for you. I've been listening to people in your position at FERC for about 15 years saying exactly what you're saying without that the system is broke and doesn't work. What needs to happen to make it work? Are you talking about something incremental or are you talking about a revolution?
Well, a couple things need to happen. One is in integrating in the demand side, what needs to happen is what we're doing at FERC, and that is putting into wholesale markets tariffs that allow people to directly bid in demand response and energy efficiency into those markets. So, in fact, we created a whole industry for demand response over 5 years at FERC where there was no industry that existed at all. So we have a level of authority there that I think is helping create that side of it. On the transmission side, however, our authority is relatively limited. We're limited to looking at interstate transmission systems on a regional and transmission
owner-operator basis. What we need to do is be able to look at across the entire interconnect. And so to do that, we need additional congressional authority. There's several bills in Congress now. I think there's actually five on the Senate side and two on the House side that all deal with this issue of planning, siting, and cost allocation, where authority needs to be expanded to some level to the federal government, but still recognizing the state's interests, working with the states in a collaborative fashion, but doing it in such a way that we can actually get this done. So I think we do need some additional federal authority, and I've testified in some of those bills, and I think that's something we need to look at very closely.
And it's good to see the governors all nodding. I just had a question for Chet Culver. You've walked the floorboards in Europe for quite a few of these events, and I wonder if you'd like to say something about how important it has been for you and your knowledge of wind to have come to Europe, and should other governors follow in your footsteps to learn more? Because I don't think America can do this on their own. The technology's all over on the other side of the Atlantic. Sometime or another, you've got to get it over here.
Well, Chet Culver, again, governor of Iowa, we've learned a great deal from our friends in Europe. Whether it's Germany or Denmark or Spain, I've been to all three countries, spent a lot of time there with two goals in mind. One, to learn more about public policy steps that were taken 20, 30, 40 years ago in places like Denmark to set up the opportunities for their respective countries. So I met with elected officials and former government leaders and learned a great deal about the importance of public policy at the state, the local, and the federal level to allow for these incredible opportunities in the renewable energy arena. I think we're making great progress in places like Iowa and the other states that are represented here, and with our new president, President Obama, who really gets it, who understands that we've got to move forward on big federal initiatives like the REC, who has already decided to invest billions in our grid. We've never done that before. So that was very helpful to me to learn about the specific things that were done in Europe through good public policy. The other thing that it allowed me to do is to have one-on-one interaction with these industry leaders in Europe to develop a working relationship, to sit down and talk about our energy future as it pertains to Europe or to the United States or to the world, and to develop relationships and a certain level of trust that encouraged, in many cases, these companies to come to North America for the first time. So that personal contact, that personal understanding, the opportunity to exchange ideas and learn more about each other, have proven to be extremely beneficial, certainly for me, for our state of Iowa, but hopefully for these countries and these industry leaders in Europe as well.
Okay. Third row. This gentleman.
Greg Hines, Crane, Chicago Business. Chairman Wellinghoff, I want to go back to the legislation pending in Congress. Tell us a little bit more, if you would, about exactly what it is, what kind of authority you want them to give you. How do the bills look? Are they getting anywhere? Is this going to be something you hope for this year or down the road? I believe as well the Obama administration is offering some financial incentives. If you'd touch on that briefly, too.
John Wellinghoff from FERC. The authority that I think is necessary is that there has to be some ultimate backstop to planning, siting, and cost allocation. At some point in time, there has to be someone who can make the final decision if it's not being made either on a state or regional basis. But I think all deference needs to be given to the states and to the regions to solve those problems in their own areas. And I think that it can be done. You're seeing work in the Eastern Interconnect under the governors, and I've already had discussions, and we're going to continue those throughout the upper Midwest, upper Mideast. And then you're also going to see the same going on in the Western United States as well. The Western Governors Association has formed a group, and they're working on transmission. We also have the RTOs throughout the Eastern Interconnect working on that. So ultimately, you need to ensure that if it can be done by the state and regional entities, that it needs to be done there. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't get done and we have a national renewable energy standard, you have to have somebody there to say, okay, this is how we need to move forward. So I think that's where we need to go with the legislation. There are, as I say, a number of bills in the Senate side, a number of bills in the House side, and they're all sort of moving pieces. So whether we're getting somewhere or not, they seem to be progressing, and they seem to be sort of coalescing on the Senate side. There's a number of amendments being proposed to one or more of the bills that are there. There's Senator Bingaman's bill, there's Senator Reid's bill. So we're certainly providing it, expertise and advice from FERC, and my staff are meeting almost on a daily basis with the Hill staff to talk about the changes that are going on to ensure that what ultimately comes out is something that we can implement. So I think we're going to get something, and I think we are going to get something this year, ultimately. And then finally, on the money issue, yes, there is a lot of money that was given out on the stimulus, but I really think it is seed money. It is not the level of money that we need, as I see it anyway, to ultimately build the transmission system to the level that we need to build it to integrate in and develop and deliver the vast amount of renewables that all these governors have in their states.
This gentleman in the second row.
Thank you very much. I'm Paul Brandes from CBS Radio in Washington and also greenenergybrief.com. My question concerns financing, and maybe Governor Culver, you might talk about this. You mentioned just a couple of minutes ago all these jobs that are going to be created. People in your state can have their pick of jobs. There was a factory in your state, I think, that just laid off about 57 or 58 people, I think, however, and they blamed the credit crunch. So the question is financing. You know, all this money from the stimulus package has been described as a short-term thing. What happens when that money runs out and the venture capital crowd and others are leery about investing? What happens when the money runs out? And I have a quick follow-up.
Well, again, Chet Culver, governor of Iowa. I think you make a fair point and you ask a good question. This morning, as a part of my presentation, I said that one thing that we have to do is make sure that this stimulus works, that to make sure that the banks free up credit. I have heard from too many manufacturers that they're still having a difficult time accessing credit. So we've got to make sure that the Department of Treasury, other federal agencies see that through, that make sure that make sure that the capital crunch is limited and we free up this important capital. And we've got to do it now. There's some urgency there. The company in Iowa that you reference, every company in America is being impacted by this worldwide recession. So it's not a surprise that some of the wind manufacturers are having some issues. But I think with the exciting opportunities, with the extension of the production tax credit, that had an impact. The delay in extending that credit slowed things down unnecessarily. It's unfortunate that happened. We finally got a three-year extension there. That should lend some confidence to the industry. And but you know, it's going to take political force. It's going to take the federal government really following through on making sure that those banks free up capital as quickly as possible.
And the follow-up, the mic's not off. The follow-up is, I work part-time as a White House reporter, too, and I was there the other day looking back, and I thought, boy, wouldn't that be a great place to put a little small turbine, just like Carter put the solar panels on the roof. Now, I know, Governor Granholm, there's a factory in your state. I think it's called Mariah Power.
Power, who put one right
yeah, and they make those little,
There's one right there in the right in front of the
On the mall.
Right in the mall. Yeah.
But have you talked about getting one of those put on the White House? Could you imagine the symbolism that that would be? How would you make that happen?
It would be a beautiful thing, and I think the White House is really interested in walking the talk. I know that, and I say this for anybody, especially those small wind systems that are inexpensive and can be put on homes, businesses, and the White House. We very much encourage, and you all, on your residences, I would encourage you to do that.
We're doing it at the
governor's. Mariah Power. It's built in Michigan.
Well, we're doing it at the governor's residence in Ohio.
All right, we are too.
Would you pick up the phone and call? Would you be willing to do that?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm going to see folks from the administration on Thursday and Friday, and I'll mention it. Thank you for suggesting it.
And again, Chet Culver, Governor of Iowa. Speaking of symbolism, the President of the United States came to Newton, Iowa on Earth Day to highlight some of the great things that are happening at Trinity Industries in Newton, where they're building towers. And that was his message of the day, the amazing opportunities that wind energy in particular offer the United States of America at a time when we desperately need to create more green-collar jobs.
Second row over here, the lady in the back. Sure.
Lisa Wood with Renewable Energy World magazine. I have a question for Chairman Wellinghoff. I read recently that you said that we may no longer need to build baseload plants because we're building so much renewables and moving into a smart grid. I wanted to ask you if that quote was in fact correct. If it's not, if you could clarify. And if it is correct, what would you say to the critics, engineers, who say, oh, no, we definitely need more baseload in the system?
Well, John Wellinghoff, FERC, I've always been accused of trying to practice engineering without a license. But that aside, I was a math major and started out as a physics major. I think they need to look at what baseload really means. What we're looking at is the most economical loading order, and the most economical loading order most likely will be wind. Now, you do have to shape it. You have to ensure that you have adequate power available to meet all needs. What I said was that, in fact, we have a tremendous mix of renewables in this country, and we also have a tremendous opportunity on the demand side to reduce our loads. So the first thing we need to look at is energy efficiency, which, all studies show that, 15% minimum, as much as 30 to 40% reduction in load is possible, number one. Number two, we can look at demand response. We can look at distributed generation, solar PV systems, combined heat and power systems using natural gas, all to, again, reduce the amount of load that central systems are going to require. Then in this country, from a standpoint of renewable availability, we have the wind that we heard about today, literally thousands of gigawatts of solar, hundreds of gigawatts of geothermal, hundreds of gigawatts of biomass, hundreds of gigawatts of hydrokinetic systems possible, in rivers and streams and also in ocean. We have the potential in this country. We just have to go out and get it. And we have the potential also to operate the system so that the power is reliable and dependable and provided from these sources as long as we can, and ultimately ensure that we're using it as efficiently as possible. Tremendous amount of waste in the country currently, both on the demand side and the consumer side of the meter, and on the utility side of the meter. I didn't even realize until I got to FERC how much we could really save in this country by making our transmission system more efficient. So that was the entire context of my statement.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a question from the telephone line.
Your first question comes from the line of Cassandra Sweet.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the conference call. This is Cassandra Sweet at Dow Jones Newswires, and I had a quick question for John Wellinghoff. I hope you can hear me okay.
It's fine. You're coming through.
Can you hear me all right? I'm talking on a cell phone.
Yes, we did.
Oh, great. My question is, People have been waiting for a national renewable energy standard for a number of years. And I'm wondering, is there anything that we can do on its own to encourage, you know, greater development of renewable energy projects for, you know, kind of move development along while we're waiting for federal legislation?
John Wellinghoff from FERC. There are some things we can do, yes, and at FERC we've attempted to do those. One is looking at sort of creative cost allocation methods, which we did, in fact, in a case in California in an area called Tehachapi, where there was significant amounts of wind, a number of multiple small developers that all wanted to develop the wind in that area, but no one developer could pay what was the incremental cost of the transmission upgrade necessary to move the wind out of that area to the load center, because our traditional way of doing it was that the cost causer, being the first developer, had to pay the entire incremental cost of that upgrade. So what we did instead is we looked at and we said, why can't we look at first allowing only a portion of that to be paid by initial group of developers? If we can get 35% of the line capacity signed up for, then let's let the rest of the line be paid for by the load until the developers can incrementally come on and ultimately take up the full capacity of the line. This was a way to get around that chicken and egg problem of how do you get, you know, things like wind that has usually a group of relatively small developers and as opposed to these large central station plants, and get them to be able to develop in an area that needs a large transmission upgrade. So there are creative things that we can do. We're trying to do those at FERC, and I'm sure there's a lot more that we can do as well.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got time for one more. You, sir, second row.
Thank you very much. Scott Kinraid, Ag Day Television. I'm glad the governor of Ohio brought up President Carter's initiative back in the 70s. That initiative was beat down by big oil. Let's be real. How hard is it going to be to overcome the petroleum lobby in this country, which is really the thing that may be the biggest hurdle for this? This question is directed towards Chairman Wellinghoff.
Well, I'm not suggesting that we've beat down the petroleum lobby in this country. I'm simply suggesting that we need to look at what are the cheapest things to do. And I think ultimately, if consumers understand that they can have automobiles that run on $1 per gallon equivalent electricity instead of natural gas, or instead of gasoline, that they're going to demand them. I think if consumers start to understand that their least incremental cost of new sources of electricity are most likely from renewables, and that those sources of electricity are going to be ones that do not subject themselves, the consumer, to the volatile prices of fossil fuels, they're going to demand them. So ultimately, we have to have consumers out there being the ones to fight the fight.
Okay, thank you. This concludes our national media availability. Thanks very much to all our participants for sharing their insights with us today.